Descent. I am this. Akunta. Unrestricted. Dhamman. O you whose power. Dharmasya. Of justice. Gupjai. For the protection. Jagataha. Of the universe. Hitaya. For the benefit. Vayam. We. Cha. Also. Sarve. All. Bhavata. By you. Anubhavitaha. Enlightened and authorized. Vibhavayamaha. We manifest and develop. Bhuvanani. The worlds. Sapta. Seven. Translation, your current descent into the material realm, O Lord of unrestricted power, is meant for upholding the principles of justice and befitting the entire universe. We demigods, each depending on your grace and authority, develop the seven planetary systems. So you can repeat. Your current descent into the material realm, O Lord of unrestricted power, is meant for upholding the principles of justice and benefiting the entire universe. We demigods, each depending on your grace and authority, develop the seven planetary systems. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. As Lord Shiva glorifies Lord Krishna, a doubt may arise, since apparently Lord Krishna is standing before Lord Shiva as a historical personality with a human-like body. However, it is out of the Lord's causeless mercy that he appears to us in a form visible to our mundane eyes. If we want to understand the absolute truth, Sri Krishna, we must hear from recognized authorities on Krishna consciousness, such as Lord Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, or from Lord Shiva, a recognized Vaishnava authority who here glorifies the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Bhavataro Yamakunta Dhamam Dharmasya Guptyai Jagato Hitaya Vayam Jasarve Bhavatanu Bhavata Vibhavayamo Bhuvanani Sapta. So Om Gana Timidandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So the subject Srila Prabhupada is discussing in the purport is one in philosophy known as basically epistemology. Like, how do we know what we know? There's many different branches of philosophy. And I don't want to get too technical for you all. Epistemology basically means, how do you know what you know? And then another branch is metaphysics. I think you can guess what that means. Metaphysics. What does that mean?
Physics beyond the physical, right?
Yeah, well, physics beyond the empirical vision. In other words, things that you can't perceive either with the senses or the extended senses like the scientific instruments. That's called metaphysics. Another branch of philosophy is called logic. I think you know what that means.
Reasonable?
Reasonable? No. Logic means the whole science of determining things based on certain axioms. Let's give an example. That an axiom is, one axiom is things equal to the same thing or equal to each other. All right? So if I say this apple is equal to this apple and another apple is equal to the second apple, then both apples must be equal to each other. That's logic. You understand? It's based on axioms and syllogisms. Anyway, I don't want to get into all the details. That's another branch of philosophy. many different branches of philosophy like that. So, but the first branch of philosophy is called epistemology. Like, how do you know what you know? And that's the first thing that actually Prabhupada taught us when we joined the movement. Of course, the first thing Prabhupada said when we're preaching to people is to convince them that they don't know what they know. Because Prabhupada said to teach someone spiritual life when they think they know is like teaching someone to play the piano who's taught themselves to play the piano. First, they have to unlearn what they so-called learned. It's a practical thing. And so we've experienced that, too. Sometimes people in these so-called or pseudo-spiritual groups, it's sometimes harder to preach to them or reach out to them or share with them than it is with people who are just like plain old good old boys. You know what a good old boy is? Yeah. Yeah. Actually, Krishna came to save the most people. So basically, yeah, because just the people just like don't know anything, you know, or hippies or whatever, but people who are into spiritual life and they think they know everything, it's very hard. Just like I've experienced, you know, people who have a bogus guru, it's very hard to reach out to them and teach them about Krishna. People think they know that ultimately you're supposed to merge into God. That's a big thing. Most bogus gurus teach that. That at the time of realization, you know, God is love, you become love, you're love, God is love, you merge into the absolute. And it's hard to unteach or unlearn or whatever it is. People just clear up the fog of their minds. Just like Prabhupada said, that if one takes to an impersonal understanding of the absolute truth, studies the Shariradakya Bhasha, Shankaracharya, it's very difficult or impossible for him to understand Vaishnava philosophy. So, anyway, so Prabhupada said that the first thing you have to convince someone is he doesn't know anything. That's the first step. Otherwise, it's just arguments. Like, we don't argue with people who are Christians who think that we're going to hell. We just give them prasadam. So that's the first step. And then you have to convince them that we know something. There's an interesting story. Actually, there's an interesting story about ancient Greece. There was this personality named Socrates. I think some of you know about him. And he was called the wisest man. There was an oracle. An oracle means someone who's like a fortune teller or someone who can see beyond time and space. So there's an oracle at Delphi, which is close to Athens. This is in Greek culture, there was this oracle people would go to, like a fortune teller. You know, people would read tea leaves or astrologer. We have them nowadays, too. You go to your neighborhood astrologer or tea leaf reader or voodoo, depending on what country. Palmist. What?
Palmist.
Yeah, palmist or whatever, you know. Or they can read your eyes or psychic. So that was something like this Oracle of Delphi. So they went. Some people went to the Oracle of Delphi and said, who is the most intelligent person in Athens? And the Oracle said, Socrates is. And the question was, you know, why is he the most intelligent? Because there, you know, appears to be a lot of intelligent people. And the answer was, because he knows that he doesn't know. So that's the first step of intelligence. To just like throw up your arms and say, hey, Krishna, I don't know anything. So then we have to show people that we do know. So that may appear to be simply sectarian. We say, you know, we got the best. And everyone else is saying, we got the best. And so who's got the best? Therefore, the system of receiving knowledge is mentioned here in this verse and purport. What is the system? It's called the descending process. Descending rather than ascending. Ascending means basically pratyaksha, direct perception, or anuman, which means induction. Does everyone know what induction is? That doesn't mean when you get inducted into the army and they, you know, they shave your head and everything like that. That's not what induction means. Induction means basically you draw general conclusions by seeing different evidence in this world. That's what let me give you a practical example. You see, like Prabhupada gives this example. You see that your father died or grandfather died. You see this person died. You look at history. Everybody has died that you know about. Therefore, you come to the inductive conclusion that men are mortal. People die. Now, that conclusion, of course, it is true. But your methodology is not perfect. Because there may be a man somewhere who doesn't die. You just may not have met him. So people use that argument against the existence of God. They say, you know, I've never met anybody who's seen God. You haven't seen God. I haven't seen God. Of course, people always ask us, have you seen God? That's a question. And it's a trick question. Because if we say no, they say, well, we don't believe you. We say yes, they think you're crazy. They think you better take some psychometric, you know, some medicine to calm down if you think you've seen God. You go to the mental institution. So, So basically, this process of induction is imperfect, is an imperfect process. Because there's always cases that you haven't seen. Right? We're not God. We're not omniscient. We haven't seen every single case. So it's an imperfect process, even though you may come to a valid conclusion that all men are mortal. How do we know all men are mortal? Because that's what it says. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukha dosha anadosha darshanam. We know all men are immortal, and the soul is immortal because that comes from above, from Krishna, who happens to be omniscient. Krishna is omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, all these O's. Krishna's all the O's. Like Cheerios, you know. Yes, isn't it? Omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent. Some people have doubts about that, about God. That's another branch of philosophy called theodicy. You know, why do bad things happen in this material world in spite of the omniscient, omnipotent God? And so they say God's not omnipotent, omniscient, because he wouldn't allow all these things to happen. Just like I was speaking, you know, to Steve, who works in social work, and he sees all these bad things happening with children in society. You know, he sees the children being abused and everything. And he said that you have to be real strong in your Krishna consciousness to be able to cope with this and still believe in God. He said most social workers are actually atheists. Because you see all these things happen. If there was a God, how could he allow all these things to happen? So that's called theodicy. You know, why do bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people or innocent people? Like that, babies. Why do bad things happen to babies? So, in other words, we have this process of descending knowledge. However, as Prabhupada points out here, that this descending knowledge has to be presented by an authority, not simply that we can approach the Vedas. And this point is made where? The Mahabharata. In the conversation between Yudhisthira and Yamaraj. It's a very interesting statement. It goes, Tarko Pratishta Shrutayo Vibina, that you can't understand the absolute truth by argumentation. That's Tarko or Tarka. Pratishta, it's not established. Shrutayo Vibina. Shrutiya means the Vedas. Shruta. Shrutis. Like the Shrutis, you know, the Shrutis are the original Vedas, the Rig Veda, Tarva Veda, Sama Veda, Yasu Veda. You got that? The four Vedas. So by studying the Vedas, you'll never understand the absolute truth. Mashad Rishir, Yasha Matam, Na Binam, nor by going to any of the philosophers. Or philologists, philosophers, whatever you may call them, because they each have a different opinion. Just like, it's interesting that if you go into the bookstore where they sell philosophy books, every philosopher has a different opinion, or else he couldn't publish. If you had the same opinion, you know, just I agree with Socrates. I mean, that's the end of your book. Right? I mean, there's no book there. Yeah, I agree with Saki. Okay, you agree. So, fine, Hare Krishna. But you have to, you really have to take up from where you're, even if you have a guru like Socrates, you have to take up and develop your own philosophy based upon what he said. You see that in modern psychology too. You have Sigmund Freud, and then you have the neo-Freudians. That means the new Freudians, for those of you who don't know what it is. And then you have other psychologists, the behaviorists, and other people like that. And anyway, don't want to talk about psychology. So everyone has to develop their own, like, take on things to be a successful rishi. Otherwise, you know, who's going to pay attention to you? If you're just like a rubber stamp or chip off the old block, nobody's going to pay attention. And then finally, it stated, dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhaya. That the truth is actually dharmasya tatvam. That means the truth of dharma. Nihitam, it's hidden. It's contained. Nihitam guhayam, it's hidden in the hearts of the great souls. And therefore, the only conclusion is, famous verse, Mahajanayena gatasya panta. I think you all know that final line. Mahajanayena gatasya panta. As Prabhupada said, follow the path chalked out. Probably use the word chalked, which is definitely an English, a UK English expression, isn't it? You know, follow that path chalked out. You wouldn't say that in America. Chalked out. Yeah, it's something to do with someone taking a piece of chalk and marking a path. That's what it has to do. So follow the path chalked out by the Mahajanas. And that's how you understand the truth. Now, how do you understand who's a Mahajana? That's another question, you know. There's so many, like Prabhupada said, rubber stamp Mahatmas. Is it? Rubber stamp means, you know, just stamp, you go to the official. Oh, yes, you're a Mahatma. Just like Wizard of Oz? Isn't it? And, the Scarecrow wanted a brain, right? So they gave him a certificate. A university degree. Isn't it? In that movie? Does anyone remember the movie? Scarecrow wanted a heart, and the Tin Man... I wanted a brain, and the Tin Man wanted a heart, right? See if I got it right. It's been years since I've seen that movie. So they just simply gave him a certificate. And you got a brain. So... Or as they say something that sometimes about PhD piled higher and deeper. And actually in the Bhagavatam it says that that someone will be known as intelligent in Kali Yuga if he can juggle words. That's a symptom of Kali Yuga given in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. So how do we know who's a Mahatma? You know, Mahatma Gandhi, is he a Mahatma? Or... Satya Sai Baba, is he a Mahatma? I mean, who's a Mahatma? So Krishna also gives that particular definition in the Gita, what he says, Mahatmanas tu mam partha, daivam prakritam ashrita, bhajan chinanyam, manasho, ketva, bhutanamabhyam. Mahatma is one who is a Mahatmanas tu mam partha, daivam prakritam, is always engaged in the spiritual energy. And always... hearing and chanting satatam kirtiyanto mam yatantas cha dradavratap. That's Krishna's definition of a Mahatma. And the opposite of that is a Duratma. Duratma means a bad soul. Mahatma means a big soul. The word Maha means big. Just like sometimes sannyasis are called Maharaj, means big passion. Did you know that actually sannyasis had never been called Maharaj up until the time of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur when he started to use that term to give sannyasis the prestige to preach? Previously, sannyasis were always called Swami, and Maharaj was specifically reserved for kings, like the Maharaj of Jaipur. That doesn't mean the sannyasi of Jaipur. It means the, you know, the king. Maharaj Ambarish. Prithu Maharaj. All these Maharajas. So, anyway. So, this... Krishna actually defines who is a Mahatma, great Atma, great soul. And he actually tells us which of the Mahatmas to approach in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, what, Tadvidi, Pranivatena, Parivrasanena, Devya. One who has seen the truth. So this is what is mentioned here in this verse, that Lord Shiva has actually seen and has seen Krishna. Of course, it also mentions in the Brahma Samhita, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Shantakshadaiva Rudyeshu Vilokiyanti. The pure devotee has always seen Krishna in his heart of hearts. So, it's rain, auspicious rain. You needed rain, right?
Yes.
Good. That's nice. So, that's anyway. So, one who has seen Krishna, one who continues to see Krishna, he's actually a real topmost Mahatma. And so, of course, we are following his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. It's an interesting story. There's many stories about how Srila Prabhupada directly seen Krishna and always remembering Krishna. One story comes from when Prabhupada, before he came to the Western world, he had one disciple. What was the disciple's name again? I forget. Anyway, it was a gentleman. So he was in Jhansi with this one disciple. And this disciple was staying right next to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhaka Mishra, or something like that. Prabhaka. That was the disciple's name. And so he was staying right next to Prabhupada. And then he would hear, every night he would hear, or 24 hours a day, he would hear Prabhupada, you know, chanting the holy names of Krishna in ecstasy. So one time he just went into Prabhupada's room while Prabhupada was chanting in ecstasy like that. And Prabhupada was jumping around the room and dancing and chanting, you know, Hare Krishna like that. And Prabhupada had around his neck a garland of kadamba flowers. Does anyone know what kadamba flowers are? Kadamba is actually the tree that represents Radharani. What's the tree that represents Krishna? Does anyone know? Tamal tree. There's a tamal tree is blackish, and the kadamba tree is sort of like Radharani's color, golden. So he was dancing around with all these kadamba flowers, big, big kadamba flowers, you know, like the size of basketballs practically. And Prabhaka, he said to Srila Prabhupada, where do you get these flowers? Because these flowers don't grow at this time of year. These flowers don't grow here anyway. Especially this size. He's never seen such flowers. And did anyone ever hear the story before? And then Prabhupada said, Krishna gave them to me. So, I have personally not had that experience of Krishna giving me anything, except for a hard time. Yeah, just to help me in Krishna consciousness, you know. Disease and everything like that. Of course, Krishna says that. What is it? Yashaha manugrinami arishye tadanamshanai. For those who I especially favor. So I guess I got special mercy from Krishna. He gives me a hard time, you know, stomach aches and things like that. So so there is, you know, someone who has actually seen the truth, personally coming in contact with Krishna, and that's his divine grace to the Prabhupada. And there's other stories too, of course. There's a story of Srinivasa, not just the Prabhupada, there's a story of Srinivasacharya, who would go into meditation. To find Radharani's toe ring that was dropped in the water, and then his disciple entered, Ramchandra Kaviraj entered into meditation along with him. And they were gone for several days, you know, at least gone externally. And everybody was all worried about them. And then they came back. And they had, you know, things from the spiritual, they had manifest, you know, things from the spiritual world that came with them. Not only did they partake of the same pastime, but they manifested things from the spiritual world. So, I mean, this is the quality of a Mahatma. That's what Krishna says. When we've seen the truth, tadvini pratipatena pariprashnena sevya upadakshanti tekas kandinas tatvadarshana. They're knower of the truth. They're seeing the truth. Prabhupada translates this in various ways. So such a person can present perfect knowledge. Otherwise, if they're not like that, then they, what, have a tendency to cheat, imperfect senses, they make mistakes, right? These are all the, this is all epistemological stuff that Prabhupada presented to us. What, they cheat, they have imperfect senses, they make mistakes, and what was the last one? Illusion. They have a tendency to be an illusion. Yeah, illusion. Yeah, tendency to forget. They have a tendency to be an illusion. So, therefore, we trust people who are on that perfect platform. And that's why we believe that Krishna is God. And, of course, we also see Krishna every day. Another reason we believe is we have the reciprocation. In other words, we, as we perform devotional service, can experience our spiritual growth day by day. It gets better every day. It gets lighter every day. You understand, the consciousness gets better every day. That's my experience after so many years in the movement. It's not just 16 rounds and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt, you know, like that. You know that song?
That's my favorite song.
Yeah. 16 rounds, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. Yamaraj, don't call me because I can't come. You heard that song?
Yeah, it's amazing, man. I sang it yesterday to Vedanta Krishna.
Really? So it's not just that. It's that you feel things getting different. Prachaksha Bhagavam Dharmyam. That's another way. You understand? According to the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, was it Raja Vidya Raja Guyam? Pavitram Idam Uttamam. Prachaksha Bhagavam Dharmyam. Shushukam Kartamavyam. So if you perform this devotional service, then every day you actually get more and more realization. Prachaksha, that means realization, a direct perception. Aksha means eyes. Prat means direct. Pratyaksha Bhagavam Dharmyam. You get direct perception through your spiritual eyes. And you see the deities. You see the deities. A pujari can actually experience the deities reciprocating. Like Prabhupada asked, one of the devotees asked Prabhupada, you know, is Krishna happy? And Prabhupada said, you're the pujari, you should know whether Krishna is happy or not. So we actually feel this reciprocation. This also reinforces or proves that we're doing the right thing. It's not just blind faith. Prabhupada said blind faith. In the same verse in the Bhagavad Gita in the purport, Prabhupada said blind faith and absurd inquiries are condemned. We don't want cult members. You know, people are just going to drink the Kool-Aid. You know what I mean by that?
I think so.
Yeah, we were talking about yesterday, Jim Jones, you know. He said, everybody drink the Kool-Aid, the devil's coming. I don't think we'd have to worry about people doing that here. You know. People are not so blind here. You know, Christian consciousness, you know, we're not like that. If I said, you know, all right, you're going to bring out the Kool-Aid, you know. Maya's coming, we're all going back to Godhead together. He'd say, he'd call the funny farm, you know, the funny farm or the men in white or something like that. Mars has gone off the deep end. So fortunately, we're not blind like that. And Prabhupada said, blind following absurd inquiries are to be condemned. But when we find someone who actually sees Krishna, we accept that person and his what he tells us about Krishna. And that's why we have faith in what we're doing, because of our own experience and perceiving others who are on the perfect platform, and also perceiving others who are making advancement. You know, sometimes we want to go to our God brothers and say, you know, I remember you when you were smoking marijuana. Don't be so puffed up, you know. You're just like a dog in stool, isn't it? Sometimes you go on the internet and you find people who want to keep your what is that called? Oh, the naked mother philosophy, right? That your mother was naked when she was young, therefore she should always be naked. You know, everybody's born naked. You were born naked. Is anyone here born with clothes? Does that mean you should stay the same way? That's stupid. So You know, we should see how our God brothers, God sisters, God uncles, or God forbid, our God nephews, God nieces, are all advancing. This also reinforces our, isn't it? It reinforces because, oh, I remember you when you were doing this, and now, wow, you've really advanced in Krishna consciousness. You transform. So that reinforces my faith in the process. It actually makes me convinced when I see that. Here's someone who's chanting. And they really advance beyond what they were before. Not that they should always remain. You know, like I said, we find these harsh critics who just like look at the devotee's past and say, this is what you did in the past. But according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that's one way of offending a Vaishnava. You consider their past. Or even present reactions from past activities. Or even some accidental deviation. So anyway, all these things convince us that Krishna consciousness is real. The devotees, the pure devotees, and our own experience. And, of course, Krishna, just one final thing, Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita says, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramamapam, Purusham, Shashvatam, Divyam, Adidevam, Aham, Vibhuhum, Hustvam, Rishi, Aksarve, Devarshir, Naradas, Tata. That I know, Krishna, that you're God, basically, I'm paraphrasing, because all the great sages have confirmed this, like Narada, Devala, Vyasa, all of them. So this is our epistemology. This is how we know what we know, and how we know what we're doing is the right thing. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So here Lord Shiva is seeing Krishna, and that's proof that Lord Krishna is real and Lord Shiva is a pure devotee. So any questions or comments about any of these points? A little philosophy today. Yeah.
You know, Nanda Maharaj used to say, they have their microscopes and telescopes. Mm-hmm. We have our deities.
Yeah. Yeah, the microscopes and telescopes are simply extensions of the empirical senses, of the mundane senses. But Krishna can't be measured, nor can the spirit be measured by some mundane instrument, because it's not the right instrument. You can't use a telescope to see magnetism. It's the wrong instrument, right? Mm-hmm. It's the wrong instrument. You've got to have the right instrument to measure the right thing. Just like the other day we were in New Orleans and we were trying to measure the decibels of the kirtan so they wouldn't get arrested. You know, after a certain amount, you know, decibels means the sound level. So this is the law. I looked up the law on the internet. Over 75 decibels, you're not allowed to have 10 feet away from your property. So I was going to argue with the police when they came. So, but I was looking. I forgot to bring my decibel meter with me. My computer couldn't measure decibels. I actually have a decibel meter that I bring to kirtans to show the devotees how they're destroying their eardrums. How the sound level is higher than a jet taking off on the runway sometimes.
In New Orleans, you can adjust that with a $50 bill, though, I think.
Yeah. New Orleans, you don't need a decibel meter. You just go to the place. It may get a little more expensive nowadays, especially since the neighbor is a prominent person in the government. So you have to have the right instrument to measure. You know, decibel meter to measure sound levels, or light meter to measure light levels. You know, it's just practical. So to measure spirituality, you have to have spiritual instruments. The right spiritual instrument is the consciousness. Not a telescope, not a microscope. And the consciousness is the instrument. It's because that's what we're dealing with, the level of consciousness. So, any other questions or comments? Yeah. You mean within ISKCON?
Yes. Yes.
Well, you flip a coin or something. Or you have a dartboard with different pictures on it. No, don't do that. That's offensive. But that's a question that's oftentimes asked. Well, first of all, you have to understand what the qualities of a spiritual master are. I've been dealing with this a lot in terms of disciples of Prabhupada who have left ISKCON and are initiating outside of ISKCON. And the first point is Sumitpani. This is famous verse. Tadviganartam sagurameva vikachet Sumitpani shochim brahmanishtam. Which is basically the translation is one must accept the spiritual master. But the qualities of the spiritual master are, number one, he's a servant of his guru. So what does it mean for a Prabhupada disciple to be a servant of Prabhupada? Does anyone know? Can anyone tell me? Besides the basic, you know, ABC stuff, like, you know, 16 rounds, four regulated principles, you know, put on tilak and all that other nice stuff. Besides that?
His mission.
So, but what is Prabhupada's mission?
His society.
You could say, you know, I've made my own society and this is pushing on Prabhupada's mission. Now, my question is that true? That I'm pushing on Prabhupada's mission in the Veer Krishna Goswami society? Where I'm the founder of Acharya, you know, put my picture on all the. All over it, your magazine, you know, back to me, back. Instead of back to God. You know, I'm being a little facetious. That means a little sarcastic. So what it means is that you remain part of Prabhupada's society and serve. Even though, you know, there may be a lot of sacrifice, just like in the GBC. You know, you think, or some of you may think being GBC means you get, you know, all the perks. You know, you get your perks, you get Mercedes. I haven't seen a Mercedes yet. But you get, I have a Honda, but that's about it. So you get all these perks, you get to sit with the big wigs and eat, you know, whatever you're eating in Mayapur. No, you get to sit through 12 days of 8-hour meetings and get berated during those meetings, you know, chastised, by our professional facilitator, Gopal Bhatta. Has anyone ever met Gopal Bhatta? You have, Yogi. So get told how, you know, you're just like not doing enough for Prabhupada. Every time you pull out your computer and you want to just like take a little break in your mind from the meeting, someone comes up to you and chastises you. You're not following the code. You know, you're 60 something years old. You're being treated like a 10-year-old. So that's the perks you get, you know. So and then and you get to pay for all your travel in GBC service. Nobody pays you back for it or anything like that. So it's a sacrifice. It'd be a lot easier, you know, to have your own society and just like everybody just worshiping you and everybody. I mean, speaking from the position of a guru and not having to be accountable to anybody, isn't it? A lot easier. And many of our God brothers have done that. And not that I wish to criticize them. They may be great devotees. But to me, serving Sumitpani, serving Srila Prabhupada's mission, means serving Srila Prabhupada's mission. Sumitpani basically means fetching water for the spiritual master. That's where the pani means water. Sumitpani means to bring water for the spiritual master, to be a servant to the spiritual master. That means to serve his order. Prabhupada said in the fourth canto, part four, that one should be ready to leave his body with the spiritual master when the spiritual master leaves his body, unless one is ready to serve the mission of the spiritual master. So that's the first point. And perhaps that, to me, that's the most important point. You know, is someone a bona fide spiritual master or not? Is he a servant of his spiritual master? And as far as Prabhupada disciples, and I'm not criticizing anyone outside of ISKCON, but as far as Prabhupada disciples are concerned, is the person serving the mission of Prabhupada, which is ISKCON? He can't say, well, this is the bigger ISKCON. You know, he can define everything as ISKCON, you know. This is the bigger ISKCON and encompasses everything. No. Prabhupada himself defined what ISKCON is, and ISKCON means basically is managed by the GBC, who may make mistakes in their management, but we cooperate for the idea of staying together and carrying out Prabhupada's objective, which is to make the whole world Krishna conscious. If you simply have your own little moth or mission, then what will happen is it will fall apart when you die. But when you serve ISKCON, whatever you do for Prabhupada will be taken care of, just like you have this temple here. I mean, all of us, I hate to tell you, will die one day. You know, it may come as a shock to you. You know, it's pretty gruesome. Even Yogi, one day, you know, he's going to... Not Yogi. Everyone else. You know, one day he'll go to Never Never Land, too, you know.
He might, but not Ronnie.
No. Everland.
Everland, okay. Well, never grow up, you know. Isn't it like that's where you stay young forever? That's Never Never Land. So, that's why it's called Never Never Land. Did you know that?
Yeah.
You never grow up. You stay young. So then, does that mean everything he's done, everyone's done here, will fall to pieces? No, there's a GBC, it's part of ISKCON. It'll be taken care of. It's like I've tried to do service throughout this lifetime and maybe made some projects or whatever, made a lot of mistakes. But I know whatever I've done for Prabhupada will continue, whatever good I've done will continue because I'm part of the society. Whereas if you're outside of the society, then what'll happen is, you know, probably your disciples will start fighting with each other after you leave your body. And that's it. You know, the thing broken up. You see, with the Gaudiya Math, because they didn't have a GBC, it broke up. But ISKCON has this mechanism whereby your service is protected. Nice, isn't it? Yeah, the genius is the problem. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who also wanted the same thing. But they didn't do it. His disciples didn't do it. So that, to me, that's the most important quality. Samitpani and Shrochiyam, Brahmanishtam actually follow in that regard. Because Shrochiyam means he must have heard from his spiritual master and is preaching what he has heard. And Brahmanishtam means not falling down. Or being fixed. Nishta means to be fixed in Brahman or spiritual life. So those are the qualities. So first of all, make sure that someone is situated like that. And then let's say you got a whole bunch, to answer your question, let's say you got five people who you're sure are situated like that. And you go, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, catch a guru by the toe. No. Because you take shelter at the lotus feet, you know, toes. So, no, what you do is you also consider the affairs of the heart, you know, how you're feeling. You know, do you have a connection with that person? Is it practical? Will you only see that person, you know, once every 200 years? Does the person communicate by email? Or does he communicate? Does he write letters? I mean, there's also practical considerations as well as considerations of the heart. You know, there is the heart. We do have a right part of our brain. You know, right brain, left brain? Right brain is the heart brain. Emotional. Left is the, you know, just like thinking strategically, logically, like that. So, so these are all considerations, and then people have to make their own choice. No one should make choices for someone. Because the people ultimately... We can introduce people, but people should make their own choices. Because there's different fits. It's like I say, sometimes when you force people to get married to someone and it doesn't work out, guess what happens? Guess who gets blamed? The person who arranges the marriage. Isn't it? That's why I've gotten out of that business. Because I got blamed enough times. So therefore, it's better to leave it up to the individual, but give him the tools, give him or her the tools by which they can discriminate. And those tools are exactly what I stated before about, you know, Samitpani, Shrochiyam, Brahmanishtam. Okay? Yeah, this time we have so many nice devotees. All right, any other questions? Yeah, Yogi.
Well, what about the disciples serving outside of this time? I mean, we talk about the, you know, gurus or people who go off from ISKCON and just create their own society or who start initiating. What about disciples, people who have taken initiation?
They should be serving in ISKCON, Baba. We even have a GBC rule when someone takes initiation. They're told that they're being initiated in ISKCON as part of Prabhupada's society. And it's like it's like someone who gets ordained in the Catholic Church and then becomes a Protestant minister. It happens.
Yes.
It happens quite often. I mean, it's not because he wants to get married, basically. Mm-hmm. And the Catholic Church, they don't let the priest get married, right? Actually, some countries they do in Africa, but we won't talk about that. You know the reason? It's interesting history. This is a little history. Why they don't let priests get married? Does anyone know?
It was too expensive, wasn't it?
No. It was originally priests were married. They were married. But what happened is that the priests considered the church property theirs. Oh. And then they would leave it to their children. Mm. And it even happened with the popes, too. You know, there's the Medici popes. Anyway, there's a whole history where, you know, let's say new Taliban. I mean, we don't have that problem because it all belongs to ISKCON. We have checks and balances. But let's say, Yogi was a Catholic priest and new Taliban was, a Catholic monastery. And Maharani is his wife. And so then at the time of death, he would write in his will, I leave this to my children. So Ghosh, will be now the next Acharya here.
Maybe the children being the legal owner would then decide to sell it.
Yeah, that's what happened too. Because they not only did they take over the monastery, and sometimes they were completely unqualified. Mm-hmm. They just used it as a material means to make money, and then they would sell part of the property. So therefore, the Catholics decided no more married priests. Mm. And of course, that hasn't worked too well either, for a variety of other reasons. I mean, sometimes in the catacombs between where the priests lived and the nuns lived, they would find bodies of babies, aborted fetuses. So there was a lot of illicit activity going on, child abuse. You know about all these things. So. Mm. I mean, therefore, in ISKCON, everything basically belongs to Prabhupada and Prabhupada's society. It doesn't belong to me. I don't have a right to take it with me or leave it to anybody when I leave this world. Mm. Does that answer your question, Yogi?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, quick questions or comments? Yeah.
Maybe just getting a little far afield from ours, but what about, we had a couple of devotees here that were initiated by a disciple of Sri Ramaswamy.
Yeah.
And I guess it was decided that one of them was a Brahmin, as long as he was chanting and following that it was okay to serve the deity. So is that true?
Yeah, there can be exceptions made. That's fine. We accept. There are other bona fide groups. I mean, we accept them. The whole point is that the general principle is people should be serving within their own mission. That's the general principle. Although exceptions can be made for various reasons, if their own guru gives permission, and if ISKCON gives permission. It's like transferring people from one zone to another inside ISKCON, isn't it? You got to consult the GBC. Did you know that? No. Like if someone goes from one zone to another, the receiving and accepting authorities have to agree. It's not just the wild, wild west. There's etiquette.
You call the GBC?
Yeah. I mean, just like if I want to take Dribuj to North Carolina, I have to consult with the Ogindra.
We don't need to put your number on the bulletin board.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I put, positions open in North Carolina, green cards and one year guaranteed. I'll get people flocking from every temple in America. Right? Because I don't.
You got that 16 rounds down a little bit more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 8 rounds. You get a stipend of $2,000 a month just for worshiping the deities. it's just like the football teams. They recruit. They outbid. But they But basically, they have to consult with the team that the person is in. Oh yeah, they would steal. The temple president would wake up one morning and find all the brahmacharis gone. He said, where do they go? Because that night, Tamal Krishna Maharaj had preached to them and told them they were in Maya if they stayed in the temple with all the householders, you know. So the poor president had to do all this deity service the next day. So, there, you know, there's an etiquette. I'm not saying that sometimes people can serve in other missions if there's agreement between both missions. That's manner, that's good manners. But what we have in general now is the is raiders, you know, people who raid ISKCON. ISKCON is not raiding any other organization. You know, people may come, but we're not going out and just around their communities and just like just targeting people. We're not doing that. I don't know any ISKCON devotee who's doing that. But some other organization. So that's not the right etiquette. The right etiquette is you sit down and you talk and you make some arrangement. Yes. You go serve. Like Prabhupada, he sent one of his disciples, his name was Hrishikesh, to one of his godbrothers to study. But then the godbrother reinitiated that devotee. Did you know that? It happened when Prabhupada was on the planet. The godbrother wouldn't let Prabhupada's letters reach that disciple. And he told the disciple that, you know, Prabhupada's really not that much interested in you anymore, so let me just reinitiate you. So that is not manners or etiquette. There's manners when dealing with different societies. And we have no problems in exchanging people with other societies as long as it's done the proper way. I mean, in fact, our head pujari in Vrindavan is initiated outside of ISKCON. Did you know that?
No.
Mukunda, he's initiated, but it's all done with the proper etiquette. And he doesn't violate that etiquette. He doesn't preach about his guru trying to steal people away. I mean, he's a friend of mine. I love him. I mean, he's a wonderful devotee. But it was all done properly. His disciple, Narayan Maharaj. But that case, it was done properly. Everything was done properly. There was permission on both ends. And he's not a political person. What we don't like is politics. You understand? When you try to steal people. It's not the Radha Damodar days anymore. Well, sometimes it's the grass is greener on the other side. In other words, it appears to be greener. And, you know, things may be, it may be easier. You don't have all these rules and regulations to follow. You could initiate people just chanting four rounds. Let's say if you're a guru, I'm just presenting it from a guru's perspective. That, you know, you can just really spread the mercy, initiate people with four rounds. You don't have to follow any authority. Wouldn't that be nice not to have to follow an authority? I know that, but I'm
saying they go together. You can't say any organization, you know, they have Bible or whatever. When it's Prabhupada, this kind is like you're leaving Prabhupada.
Yeah, I know that. That's the point I'm making, but I'm just trying to present why people are attracted to doing it. That their loyalty to Prabhupada is not so strong. But there's other allurements. You know, you get to, you know, people want to be independent. Everybody, I want to be independent. I'd like to just like be independent, you know, do whatever I want, go to Radhakund. When I go, I mean, for example, I go to Govardhan, Radhakund. I live there quite a bit. And what attracts me more than anything else is that I'd like to be a Babaji. You know, I'm not a public persona in general, even though, you know, I appear to tell a lot of jokes in class. But my persona, I like to be alone and just chant Hare Krishna, and I like to just put on the Babaji Dhoti. You know the Babaji Dhoti? The short dhoti, and just chant all day long and say, goodbye, cruel world. Yeah, I know that. But then I think about my duty to Prabhupada, and that's why I don't do it. So there are attractive things we may be attracted to.
If you're interested, I can tell you I've been in ISKCON for about 30 years. I mean, in the early days, I was in ISKCON. The last 20 years, I've been out of ISKCON, even though I've been in ISKCON. what you do is you just mentally leave it by Krishna's grace. You know, there's a lot of us in ISKCON who haven't really, aren't really in ISKCON, you know, so it's like, that's another form.
Well, you've been pushing forward the movement, even with your herbs. You're attracting people to join. I mean, I've seen that. Yeah, so out of your humility, you may be saying one thing, but you're attracting people to ISKCON. You're working for Prabhupada.
I don't know why I was making that point, but I was just kind of like making the point that, you know, it's such a wonderful spiritual organization. It's an incredible opportunity. You know,
yeah.
And here we are within the ISKCON movement, and like, because of your wonderful service, you're traveling the world constantly, dedicate your whole life. You know, what is ISKCON? What do we really mean by ISKCON anymore? You know, what is it?
ISKCON is a society which has as its objective to change the world. To change, to save people, to bring people to a more natural way of life, a Krishna conscious life. I mean, read Prabhupada's objectives, you know, the principles, seven principles of ISKCON. And, you know, it's managed by different, you know, a hierarchy. You know, temple presidents, GBC, regional secretary, whatever. It's managed in such a way like that. That's what ISKCON is. And it's, yeah, it's part being part of a worldwide mission that has a very important purpose. So therefore, we actually have to give up some of our own desires in order to be part of that. Like I have. Like I said, I'd just rather just sit and chant Hare Krishna if it's just a personal thing. It's much easier. I mean, no criticism, no internet. You don't have to read on the internet all the latest stuff about yourself. No accountability. You know, it's great. It's like going out of your parents' home, isn't it? First time you left your parents' home at 18, and you just party, you know. It's my party. Like that song goes. So, but we don't do that because of our love for Prabhupada. And our desire to carry out Prabhupada's mission. We should not be spiritual opportunists in it for our own self. Ask not what ISKCON can do for me, but what I can do for ISKCON. That's how we should feel. Okay, I think it's time. Everybody's starting to faint from hunger. All right, and that's it. All. For the youth.
Adult.
What does that mean? Anybody over what age is not permitted? What?
65.
Because I think Purampara thinks himself a young adult still. So what does that mean, young adult?
I think it means someone around LP's age, Lindy's age, kids that grew up in the movement, or young people that have came. It's not, you know, that's sort of focus on that more, so we can have one for older people, too, would be interesting, you know.
Well, it appears to me that that's discrimination.
So what's wrong with discrimination?